Hey, it's Kate and Simon.
In this month's show, we talk about mental health, we talk about suicide.
If you're not in the mood to listen to that kind of thing, then just skip this one and we'll see you again next month.
And now on with the show. From the BBC, it's Ouch's talk show for July. I'm Simon Minty.
And I'm Kate Monaghan. And the deal is, we're a disability talk show, if you don't know that already. The guests are disabled, I mean, kind of. And we are too, I mean, kind of. If you count Simon being a bit short, then yeah. Which hopefully makes for some good, awkward and incisive chat.
Yeah, very awkward already.
Yeah. Yeah. We've got some great guests and they're sitting right in front of us as I speak. And we'll introduce you to them in a moment.
How you doing, Kate?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good, but we're not going to be here for a bit, are we, after this one?
We are not,
What's happening to you?
Well, I'm off to have a baby.
Ooh.
I know, very exciting. A baby I haven't grown in my stomach, that I've grown in my wife's stomach instead, in case everyone's looking at me thinking, you look very svelte for somebody who's 8 months, 9 months pregnant.
Everyone is nodding, saying that's what they were thinking.
Yeah, and why aren't you here?
I'm pregnant too.
Oh, congratulations.
Everyone's looking going, he is!
Yeah.
hip replacement.
I'm going to have a new baby and you're going to have a new hip.
Mm-hmm.
That's exciting. Yeah. When we come back to you all. Anyway, if you are enjoying our incisive and awkward chat, then please, please review it on iTunes or whatever podcast service you get it on. And also share us on social media. That way other people will get to know it and enjoy it too. So find us on the web, bbc.co.uk/ouch, where you can subscribe for absolutely free, my friends. What a bargain.
Let's meet the guests who will be with us throughout the programme. Lawrence Clark is a stand-up comedian. Some say he's disability's answer to Dave Gorman, you know, the Google whack bloke.
Why is he disability's answer to...
I think it's that kind of, you use a bit of PowerPoint.
Who said that?
My producer, because it's written in my script. It's not a review. But do you think that it must be the PowerPoint link?
Yeah. It must be. It's the only thing I can think of.
Like yeah, you look a bit like him.
Yeah, well, that's so good on my side, though. BBC.
BBC says the disability version of Dave Gorman. What a ringing endorsement.
Now, let's be clumsy. You're a wheelchair user. You have cerebral palsy. He and his wife, Adele, who also has CP, with the subject of We Won't Drop the Baby, which is a documentary focusing around the birth of their second child back in 2012 in August. So exciting. You can see him doing his new show at the Edinburgh Fringe. More on that soon.
I'm excited to hear more about your kids as well, because as a disabled parent-to-be, I'm...
I'll tell you what you're letting yourself in for.
Harriet Dyer, you're also going to be at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, but with two shows, not one, but two. One of them, Barking Tales, showcases comedians doing material about mental health. It's temporarily transferred from her usual club night of the same name in Manchester. Her other show is her own stand-up comedy. More on that later. Harriet has been diagnosed as bipolar relatively recently, though, and admits that it may have been obvious to lots of people a long time ago. Is that right?
Oh yeah, everyone knew about it other than me. And then in 2014, the end of it, I was diagnosed, and that was after, because my Edinburgh show that year was about, oh, everyone thinks that I've got mental health problems but I'm just eccentric. And then I realised they were right. Because I wrote the second time they tried to section me, like when I was like writing the show, and then I was like, oh yeah, there's probably a problem there.
So they tried to section you twice.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
like,
you still didn't think.
No, because my mum was just always, like, just always said, there's nothing wrong with you, you're just eccentric. So you believe your mother, didn't you? So,
is your mum eccentric too?
She was, yeah. She passed away. What was it? And the end of 2014. But she was well eccentric. So I remember when I was 13, the doctor tried to put me on Prozac then, but my mum was like, "Oh no, she doesn't need that now."
We'll come back to that. And last but certainly not least, Jack Binstead is with us. He plays Remdog on the BBC comedy series Bad Education and in the spin-off film version of the series, which was in cinemas last summer. We don't want to sound obsessed by disability, but...
Obsessed you are, Simon.
He is
obsessed with it.
Thanks, Kate. We don't want to sound obsessed by disability, but he is the one in the wheelchair from the show. You're going to be walking us through some of the more unusual disability stories.
Or wheeling us through.
Thanks. We should go to Edinburgh, Kate. Get the train now. You're going to be walking us through some of the more unusual disability stories you've caught spreading their way around social media recently.
True.
So last time you were on, Jack, you were on with the formidable Stella Young.
It was.
She's a kind of Australian disability commentator, a comedian. She's sadly died now, but...
She has.
How was it? How was that?
Incredible. She is the funniest person I've had the pleasure of talking to.
She gave you a run for your money, didn't she?
She did. She did. We had a couple of battles.
Yeah,
we had
you did.
We had the same disability.
Yeah.
Just different types of the disability.
And okay. Different, very different perspectives, I think.
Yeah, we had different perspectives of life in general. So it was a very interesting chat. She's a great person.
Sounds very cool. What was it? Inspirational stuff. That's one of her real bugbears, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. Jack wanted to be an inspiration and Stella did not.
Yeah.
I think that's a whole show in itself.
Well, yeah, it was. We did it. Thanks for listening.
Okay, let's turn to Lawrence first. I was in Edinburgh with you last year and you're going back with your own show.
Well, we had a board with us, yeah.
Good title, Independence.
Yeah, it's mainly about independence, as I see it, as a disabled person.
Okay.
But I have visions that I'm going to turn up on the first night and there'll be rows of Scottish people with faces painted like Bravehearts.
Yeah.
I really want that to happen.
It kind of moves in phases because they had the Scottish independence referendum stay in, but now because of the EU, they're now saying they want that one to go out.
I mean, if nothing else, it's topical.
You're the Zeit. You're on the Zeit.
What is this bit about Harry Potter? Because that's the bit I'm interested in. Because your tagline is, come and laugh at stuff Lawrence can't do, guilt-free, in this tale of adolescence, love and Harry Potter.
So, you mentioned at the start the documentary, We Won't Drop the Baby. Mm-hmm. The title wasn't my idea. But then someone sent me a bit out of, I think it was the Irish Times, and it was Daniel Radcliffe talking about playing a disabled person in the West End in a play. And in order to prepare for the role, he said he watched We Won't Drop the Baby.
Really?
So, in other words, he's impersonating me.
I can't think of any greater honour than to have Daniel Radcliffe watch you for a performance, Lawrence. And so I guess you were super happy about that.
I've spent years perfecting this act.
That's kind of peculiar. I do like that. So you're...
I think it was kind of an odd feeling reading about it in the paper. I mean, I showed my older son, Tom, who was like a big Harry Potter fan at the time. And I sort of said to him, you know, Harry Potter watches you.
Yeah.
As well as us watching Harry Potter. And he quite liked that.
If that isn't in your Twitter bio, you do realise you are missing out right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It will be after today, Jack.
Now that the ouch social media guru has spoken, / token young person at the table, we'll take that advice.
So tell me, Lawrence, why is there so many comedians, supposedly, who have got cerebral palsy? There seems to be quite a few. I'm trying to think, Francesca Martinez, we know, Lost Voice Guy, Tim Renko, Just Blue, Mason Zayi, Jack Carroll, more. What's happening?
I don't know.
Have you been asked this before, presumably?
I haven't, and I knew you were going to ask it, so I was trying to think of an answer. I don't know, but maybe we got more something to prove, or...
Well, there's a bit of, doing stand-up, it's about timing, it's about your language, your work, all those sort of things. So you're doing the thing that could be potentially quite difficult.
Yeah.
Is it that...
I guess it's something immensely satisfying. I mean, stand-up comedy wasn't on the list that careers advisor gave me at school. So there's something satisfying about picking the least likely job that you can possibly do and hopefully making a go of it.
Is there anything in the thing that I guess people would make fun of you, or you might feel that people would make fun of you, the way you talk, the way you move. And so you think, actually, you know what? I'm just going to flip this on its head and I'm going to be the person who makes them laugh rather than
I think possibly, yeah. I'm thinking about school. It's a stereotype, I know, for like comedians, but I wasn't the one that went around beating people up. I was probably the one that kind of talked my way out of getting beaten up and used humour in that way. So maybe, but maybe it comes from that.
I mean, we don't know. We're saying this as some big generalisation, but nobody's got any statistics of the percentage of people with CP who have done stand-up and other impairments. So it could be a red herring. It just seems as
I don't know any with EDS, with my disability.
At the end of the day, though, you are having the last laugh, technically, aren't you? Because they're paying for stand-up comedy, and you're just sitting down. So they're paying full price, and you're giving half a performance.
It's a very old joke.
Are there many dwarf comedians out there? Would you say there's a high proportion of dwarfs?
We were on with one on Friday night, Joe Coffey.
Yes.
Yeah.
Love Joe Coffey.
And there's Tanya Lee.
Yes.
Now you've dried up. Yeah. There we go.
Iman, who's your man?
Iman.
You beat him last year.
Iman.
See, look at that.
Oh,
three.
Loads.
And we haven't even tried to think of any yet, have we? That's it.
Iman Hadjiti. That's his name, isn't it?
Who?
Iman Hadjiti. I think it's really hard for me to say. They can't say CH.
What was his name again? Iman
Hadjiti.
That stays in the show, Lawrence. Love it. Now, Jack, they'll be happy with paying money for that. Carrying on this theme of kind of inappropriate things, I knew you were in a show last year, or earlier this year.
Earlier this year? I've been busy.
And this... this was with other people with cerebral palsy. What I didn't know, this was a dance show.
It was Scottish physical dance.
What are you doing, Lawrence?
For anyone who can't see Lawrence, I mean, you're a wheelchair user. You've got problems with your arms. You really can't. I can't imagine you being able.
Well, clarify.
To dance,
it's not problem.
But...
you got involuntary movement.
Yeah.
And you're going dancing on stage.
Again, it wasn't on the list of career advisor gave me. But, like, when I signed up for it, the whole dance aspect was kind of played down.
Okay.
Until I turned up on day one, and we have a choreographer. It was called Purposeless Movements by Robert Softly Gale Birds of Paradise Theatre Company. And the idea behind it was to take the way people with cerebral palsy move anyway, and rather than try to have it to do pirouettes or fancy dance things that we'd never be able to do in a million years, to use the way we move and to make that something to watch and hopefully make it something that's beautiful. And
I'm sure you moving around was very beautiful. How was it? I mean, was it a massive release? Was it amazing? Did the audience get it?
It was hard work.
Really?
It's the hardest thing I've ever done. We got 5-star reviews in the Scottish press, which was amazing. And this talk of bringing it back next year and making it tour London and a wider area. It was a lot of moaning, a lot of crawling. I got blisters on my knees that I've only really just recovered. It was quite heavy going.
Will you do it again if they do tour?
It was so hard worth it.
Your new stand-up show, it covers sort of adolescence and stuff. Now, you were living in Liverpool, but you were at a special school all the way down south, is that right?
What
was that like, being a disabled teenager away from home?
It was really odd, particularly that particular school at the time was kind of run very traditionally, kind of like the old grammar school. and it was a bit of a culture shock. Well, when I first went down there, believe it or not, I grew up in the Northeast, and I had a Georgia accent. And I lost it very, very quickly because the number of people that ripped the mickey out of literally every line, everything I said, that not consciously, but my accent just went.
I don't want to create flashbacks, but can you do your Geordie accent now? Is it still there? Oh, you're looking at me really sick. No, don't do it if you don't want to.
No.
Just the one. Just the one. Yeah. No. I like it.
So did you feel quite cut off from your family? Did you think it was the right thing for them to do? Did you think it was the wrong thing?
It's something that me and my mum still argue about now. I guess at the time, because mainstream schools, you know, weren't anywhere near as accessible as they are now, it was put certainly to my parents that if I wanted a decent education and to progress to university, that this was the only way.
So, I mean, you've got two boys now. Yeah. Would, if the situation was the same and you were the parent in that situation, would you send your boys to that school in that circumstance?
I wouldn't now.
Okay.
I don't really agree with boarding schools, yeah, per se, whether disabled or otherwise. I don't think I would.
You also, the school had to do sort of social skills?
Yeah, this is in the show. There was a very well-meaning but misguided occupational therapist who was constantly upbeat and, you know, really trying. And she thought it would be a good idea to teach us what she called social skills. But the thing was, by being selected for this course, it kind of implies that your social skills were lacking, which, you know, to a sulky teenager into punk music, the effect it had was to just annoy me and, you know, make me even less inclined to act sociably.
What kind of things did you have to do in your social skills lessons?
The first lesson, I kid you not, it was a workshop on how to ask someone out on a date.
Ask who on a date?
Well, I got picked out as someone to, you know, demonstrate the technique to the group. So I had to ask this person out on a date. It was like, you know, twice my age.
I didn't realise there was a technique to it. Can you remember it? Do you want to give it a whirl?
Do you want to be your wingman?
No, because it was so cringy and embarrassing. I think I said to it, like, what's a nice girl like you doing in a special school like this?
Well, that would have worked on me, my friend.
And the thing was, because I was obviously very awkward and embarrassed. And so her way of dealing with that was to kind of go with it and come on to me a bit in order to... I think she thought this would build my confidence.
When you say come on to you a bit, you mean as in respond?
As in flirt and respond to my...
Well, this was a teacher...
She was an occupational therapist.
This is why they call it special school, isn't it? I can't believe...
Obviously that has... You're asking someone twice your age out in front of your mates and being forced to seduce them has the opposite effect.
So, Lawrence, you can... Obviously, people can hear all these anecdotes and more in your show. Do you want to give it a plug?
I would love to. So it's Lauren Stark Independence, and it's on at the Edinburgh Fringe in Assembly George Square in the Box from the 3rd to the 28th of August. Well, not the 16th, that's my day off, at 7 o'clock.
The one day.
And that the Box is one that's actually accessible, where people can see.
You've been there.
I've been there.
Yeah.
I saw you
two years ago. Yeah.
I was impressed with the accessibility. It was unlike most of the other Edinburgh venues.
Were you impressed with the Geordie accent? And if we want to find you, you're lawrenceclark.co.uk?
That's right.
Ouch. You're listening to Ouch, and around the table today we have comedians Lawrence Clark and Harriet Dyer, and now we're turning to Jack Binstead, comedy actor in his own right, but today he's been helping us out by trawling social media for some of the more unusual disability stories being talked about at the moment. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm very well, thank you.
You are sporting quite the, what's it called, ponytail today?
Ponytail, slight, kind of. Yeah. Just about a ponytail.
We're sort of bordering on man bun territory there.
It's Gareth Bale if he could, if he was on a chair, I guess. Gareth Bale on a chair.
Is that the look you were going for?
I thought it was a bit Gareth Bale.
Yeah. It's very much my I'm staying at home doing absolutely nothing look. But
yeah,
I started the gym recently, got back into fitness, and I've grown my hair quite a lot. Like the whole slick back, Leonardo DiCaprio sort of style. That's what I go for.
Yeah.
In the gym, all over the face. Terrible. It's distracting. I hate it. So the ponytail is just nice and simple. Keeps out the face.
Talking of sports, your first story from social media.
Yes.
A schoolboy who finally won.
You sound a bit like a granddad when you say that. Your first from the social medias. First story from the social medias.
What are you youngsters up to?
Well, earlier on this week, a video went viral of a 10-year-old boy called Daniel Bowers, who was, it was his sports day, and he was up in a running race against his peers. He didn't want to race. Now, I should mention, Daniel has cerebral palsy. Mm-hmm. Daniel didn't want to race against his friends because he felt uncomfortable. He felt upset. He thought he was going to lose the race. There was no point in him even trying. After some persuasion, the much-needed persuasion and encouragement, he did the race and won. And his peers purposely slowed down for him so that he could get the gold. And that video's gone viral. It's all over the internet. I saw it myself on Facebook. And, it's a lovely video.
See? My head's spinning. It's one of those, is this just the greatest show of friendship, or is this a little bit patronising? I mean, where are you at on this?
My first thought was that it was genuinely kindness that was the reason behind it. Obviously, when you sort of look into it. I mean, when I read the article about it, they're in year five, so they're 10 years old. And so I don't even think I knew how to patronise somebody when I was that age. So I don't reckon it would be, but you never know. The kids can be...
What do you think, Lawrence? Spiteful.
Oh, has this happened to you, Lawrence Harriet?
It's a tricky one, because my five-year-old wins every game at the minute, because he has a paddy and a meltdown if he doesn't win.
Does he have CP?
No, he just has a hell of a temper. So we went to mini golf the other day, and in his head, he won every hole. He thinks he's great, just because it's easier.
How would you feel if you were at your son's sports day and then you took part in the father's race and they all let you win? Would you ever take part in the father's race? Do they even do father's races anymore?
Yes, they do.
If they let me win, no, I feel really uncomfortable about that. I guess because he's 10 years old.
Yeah,
that's the difference.
That's what I was thinking. It's an age
maybe,
thing, perhaps.
It's maybe a bit different.
Harriet, where are you?
Well, I wonder whether, because it seems for 10-year-olds, like, it's like a wonderful thing that they would even have like thought of, because as well as... not really knowing how to patronise. They also aren't usually that compassionate. And so I don't know whether someone suggested it to them or
That's where
like
I was going to go with it next. I had a thought that possibly it could have been the fact the teacher might have pulled them aside and said, after the encouragement that they gave Daniel, you guys should let him win. Obviously not said like that, but in a way that they would understand and would feel that's the right thing to do. Mm. In which case, to me, it does sound like more of a patronising story, the fact the teacher might have said that.
And also, you know, I guess, you know, if it's between him getting bullied or letting him win a race, I'd rather they went that way than the other way.
It's taking a little bleak turn, isn't it? Thank you. Just to clarify, I remember being about 10 or 11, sorry, Harry, and I was told by the doctor, I used to play football at school, and I was told by the doctor there was a bit of bone missing in my neck, so I couldn't do sports again. I went back to school and told my friends I can't play anymore. Mm-hmm. So the whole school stopped playing football at break times. And now when I think about it, I just think, how lovely was that? But by the second break time, I said, please, can we just go back? I can't cope with this, because the whole school were just sort of wandering around, just waiting.
Similar thing happened to me when I was in school. I loved football when I was younger, a lot younger than I am now, and maybe like same age as Daniel, about 10 years old. And I went for trials as a goalkeeper for the high school team. They kicked the ball at me, and I snapped my arm, completely broke it. Came back to school 6 weeks later, and I still had it in my head I wanted to play football. So I did, and the school allowed it, but they played with a foam football. So then after that, there was no hard footballs. There was no proper footballs in the school. It was all foam balls. Amazing. So that I could play.
See, the change.
Reasonable adjustment, I'd say. So what's your next story? Disabled superheroes are go.
This is my favourite story, I'd say. And there's a reason for it, which I'll explain afterwards. So this is a story about a cartoonist called Dan White, who created a comic book called Department of Ability, inspired by his daughter Emily, who has spina bifida. She publicly spoke out that she feels she has nothing to relate to in the entertainment world as a young girl with spina bifida. The cartoon is all about superheroes saving the world with their disabilities. Now, fortunately, I was actually invited down to Hamleys yesterday morning to the launch party of this comic book.
How cool was that?
Amazing. It really was amazing. I got to meet the children that the comic, the superheroes, are actually based off of, and they had their own outfits. A bit like a Power Ranger sort of thing. They had the similar outfits on, but just different colours to distinguish which one was which in the comic book.
So what are the superheroes?
Their individual disabilities are what their superpowers are.
So they're related?
So, yes.
Okay. I think, like, the Emily in her wheelchair can fly.
Yes.
You've got, like, a kid who wears blades and he can run really fast. Like, that's their... So their disabilities become the superpower. Yeah. It's really cool.
I'm trying to think of mine now. Okay, keep going, Jack.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I would be too.
Crawl through small spaces? Superpower?
Yeah.
Slide through doors and stuff.
Harriet, what would yours be?
Doesn't that Flat Stanley?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, Flat Stanley. Goes straight under the door.
Yeah. Mine would be maybe, like, the voices in my head would, like you know, like the Banshee. Was it an X-Men character? Was it the Banshee? And the squealing and the noise would, like, knock everyone out. So maybe, like, all the voices would...
That's quite a cool one. So you could get your voices to hassle other people.
Yeah, everyone else could hear the voices. Oh, what a joy.
Sounds more like a villain than a superhero, doesn't it?
With great power comes great responsibility. It depends how you use it, that's the point.
So was the Hamleys party good? Were there lots of people there?
It was incredible. There was lots and lots of inspiring children that I met and their parents. They all came down. It was on the first two floors of Hamleys. You got to walk around. There was magicians, there was entertainers, there was... all sorts of people there.
And Stan Lee, who's a very famous comic person, he's got on board, hasn't he?
He wasn't there yesterday, but there was something I spoke about with Dan, and he said that Stan Lee is on board with it, yes.
Yeah, wow. That's a huge incredible boost for them.
Your third story, Jack, is apparently there are not enough disability emojis, which, weirdly enough, I was just talking to a friend about recently. What's going on here?
Yeah, well... Scope brought attention earlier this month to the lack of emojis based around disability.
I think the whole wide world knows, even granddads like me, but just for those who don't, what's an emoji?
An emoji is Something to describe a word rather than use them. You could probably do an entire text full of emojis, little photos to resemble
a word. They're like cartoon faces.
Kind of. You get faces, you can get like a tree, you can get flags of the world, you can get anything really. There's so many emojis, but
aubergine.
Half of
them...
Except
for disability ones.
There's one. There's only one emoji currently out there for disability, which is simply a stick man in a wheelchair with a blue background, very much resembling... A blue badge.
Yeah,
okay.
Blue badge,
the logo of the blue badge.
Yeah.
And so there's more coming? Who's doing this?
I know a lot of you from Facebook, but I'm sure there
Facebook,
are plenty of
Facebook
different...
have some.
Here's our tech resident. Come on, Kate.
On the phones and on all other platforms, it's Unicode.
Right.
Release the emojis that we all use on our phones.
Recently they released an avocado, a face palm, and an emoji resembling a selfie, which... It just seems to me like, why are people crying out for these kind of emojis? What's the point?
Why is an avocado more important?
Well, Nigella, avocado on toast, it's all the rage.
Jack, what do you want to see? What would you
I
like?
I want to see a load more emojis for disability.
What would they look like?
Well, there's so many variations of disabilities out there. I mean, there's very much... a clear difference between myself and Simon. There's very much a difference between myself and... Lawrence. And so maybe some crutches, because there's people who use crutches. Perhaps an emoji of someone who is a lot smaller. So that would cater for yourself, Simon, you know?
But my emojis aren't quite small.
OK, where are you going with this, Lawrence? Thanks to our guest, Lawrence. If you were having an emoji, Harriet, what would your one be?
I don't know.
Do you text and go, oh, if only there was one that represented me better?
No.
Oh.
But I do think that the, having just the sort of wheelchair logo is, that's awful that they're making it, like, non-humanised, isn't it? So it,
I'd
I
quite
guess
like
it
the,
nice to have a person in a wheelchair instead of just a...
Exactly. I'd quite like the Stickman Communications sign for wheelchair, which is... the person in a wheelchair with their arms up, looking like they're having a great old time.
What does that one mean?
It just is, woo!
Oh, okay.
I'm in a wheelchair, yeah!
Right. I also quite like to see, like, you know, like a wheelchair with sort of the lines behind the wheelchair to resemble them going fast. That's
all.
Because I've seen a lot of the time with this one disability emoji that we have, it's used quite negatively.
Mm.
You know, people can use that in a negative manner very easily. And it becomes a problem after a while.
Yeah.
When I see corporate brochures, Harriet, and they describe mental health awareness or whatever they call it, there's always someone with their head in their hands. I kind of go, oh, that kind of look. Is there good imagery, representative imagery around mental health?
I guess the only non head in the hands despairy one that I've seen is like. Not an emoji or anything, but a lot. There's been a lot of images with the people with the black dog. Is it black?
Yeah.
So
if it was going to be an emoji for you for mental health, what would it look like?
Maybe a. You know, there's that other thing that did the rounds on Facebook where it was like, oh, it was really sweet. It was someone that had mental health problems and someone else was like, oh, are you okay then? And it was like, no, I just need a little bit of time alone. And then that person was like, oh, okay, I'll come and lie with you. And I thought that was nice. So something that would show togetherness or like maybe like the black dog. Yeah, so it's not just...
Maybe we should send in our producer's black dog. Ulrich. Right, our black dog is going to come and sit with you.
Oh, okay.
So that you've got a representative of mental health right next to you. We now have the black dog.
A live emoji.
Yeah. Do you want to sit next to Harriet?
More of a gif, isn't it, right? It's more of a gif now, isn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
I hope you're happy with us reminding you about your mental health there, Harriet, bringing your dog in.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because people wouldn't think it to, like, because at my gig that I do that's about mental health, people, like, a lot of the people that come are like, oh, well, I wouldn't have thought that you had mental health problems, but So, but now they would with me maybe and my old
should,
dog.
Maybe you should, on, you know, bad mental health days, you have a dog that just walks around with you. And that's, like, you know, symbolic.
Well, the problem with that is that sometimes I see things, so if I did have a dog there, I'd be like, oh, goodness, is it there or isn't it there? Where have I left it?
Is there any disability that can't be solved with a dog?
Oh, that's quite lovely.
That's true. They do send in the comfort dogs, you know, when there's a big tragedy.
And have you come up with an emoji for cerebral palsy, Lawrence?
Not one that I can say. She'd get away with on this show.
We'll talk about it later. We'll make it later together. Don't worry.
Thank you so much, Jack.
No worries.
Great to see you. Coming up. That, you might have gathered, is the Merry Rockers. Such a happy tune. Find out about their disability credentials and hear this track in full at the end of the show. Lawrence and Jack are still with us, but you've heard her already, but we're going to have a proper conversation now with Harriet Dyer. So you're a comedian too, and relatively recently, you mentioned this, you've come to understand you experienced mental health problems. Last time you were on the show, you told us about the time you decided to try and skip work in an unusual way. For those who missed it.
Well, I tried to... Well, I thought it was completely what people do, so I tried to break my arm with a mallet. Like, I thought, oh, I know how to get off work is to break my arm. But the thing was as well, because I lived with my friend, and when I, like, said this as an idea, she went along with it, so why would I think it wasn't... Like, I didn't have anyone going... Wait a minute, this isn't a good idea. So I'm completely not to blame in this situation.
Has it turned out that she had undiagnosed mental health problems as well? Or is it just...
Oh, no, she was just an idiot.
Amazing. So, I did hear that little bit of stand-up and that's you whacking your arm very hard. They were some crazy stories you did there.
Oh, yeah, all true, yeah.
Did you break it?
No, it was just, like, very bruised. So then I said, like, in my what I said when I did the show about it as well, is that then I said that she should just come into my bedroom, set an alarm clock in the night, don't tell me when, and then come in and just swing the mallet at my head. But then she said, I probably shouldn't do that. So maybe she wasn't such an idiot. I know, I just thought it was...
Boundaries, she's got boundaries.
Boundaries. Yeah.
Yeah, not something that I would suggest anyone does.
Oh, no, definitely not.
No, don't do that at home. Well, since we spoke with you last, you've had a diagnosis and you're on medication.
Yeah.
How are you feeling about that?
Oh, well, because obviously I don't think it's a really long-term solution. Like, well, I hope not.
So
like,
what was that diagnosis?
Bipolar disorder. And then as well, lately, I think I've been told I've got post-traumatic stress, like stuff that's happened before. So I'm going to go into to get help with all that so I sleep better. Because I wake up in the night and I have a really... oh, no, can I say that? My nether regions feel like they're on fire, like, in the night. I know. And because I have, like, these traumatic nightmares, and then I wake up and I feel like there's a blooming disco inferno. No. like, hotter than the Earth magma, like, area.
Nobody wants that in the nether
regions.
Nobody. No.
Like, and then it just starts the day off on a...
Harriet's developing material while the rest of us are trying to chip in. That's a great story.
I've got to say, it shows up just thrush.
No, because you can't see anything. It's just hot.
Where is this going?
I'm sorry. I'm opened sure. a can of...
Now? Okay, so you've... Right, yeah. So we've got the diagnosis.
Burn, baby, burn.
Danger. How about it?
And then... But so you're on tablets now. I don't know about the nether regions, but how's that helping with the head?
Oh, yeah, sorry. So the head, oh, goodness, it's absolutely... Oh, it's wonderful. It's just that for the first time in all my life, everything seems, like, quite manageable. Like, there's still ups and downs, but I think that's to be expected because life happens And in that time as well, my mum's died, and that's a massive thing to deal with. So, yeah, it's made everything manageable. But then, I don't know whether it's a side effect or something, but I see a lot, I just see things like crawling and stuff and, like, animals that aren't there. And I don't know whether that's supposed to happen. But then it could just be my eyes, because sometimes, like the other day, I thought there was a dead cat floating in the air, but it was just a bin bag. But that's just normal. Like, people see stuff like that all the time.
Is that just a quick glance, and you caught something out of the corner of your eye? Or you mean you were looking and thinking that's
I was walking towards it, like, oh, goodness, I should probably out this cat.
I'm so come to see your show. Go back a step, because when I've been to the doctor and said, not feeling great at the moment, and one of the offers is some sort of medication.
Yeah.
And they've always stepped back, and I've said, is it going to make me a bit foggy or a bit, you know, not as clear-headed? And they say, probably, da-da-da. But this is good for you? This is working?
Yeah.
Is that part of that manageable bit?
Well, I think because I'd waited, like, all my life, because I'm still quite newly diagnosed, I guess, it was just needed, because it was just, like, this is a bit morbid, but I just always wanted to kill myself, like, all the time. And I'd be chatting to people, and in my head I would be like, yeah, I'm going to do that later. And the only reason I didn't was, like, because I just couldn't put my family through that. So I've always been sort of quite logical. So now that has just stopped. And then I started off on the sort of halfway dose, and now I'm on, like, the highest dosage that one can be. And then I started getting really anxious about, well, it's weird doing stand-up when I get so anxious about people.
Absolutely.
And, like, busy spaces, which I think is quite like a lot of people are. So then I've also been put on beta blockers to help with that. And apparently they give beta blockers to snipers.
Wow.
So I could go sniping.
Great. I mean, I wouldn't no, advise it, but it's great to know that you could.
Yeah.
Why did it take you so long to get a diagnosis
and
to actually
Yeah.
I mean, you were offered tablets at 13 and you said no. Why?
Mm. Well, at 13 you just do what your mum says. And then, and I just thought, because if something's always been a certain way, you don't know that it's not normal. So, like, all my life I just had, like, awful thoughts all the time, and at school I never fitted in really with a group, but I just didn't know that it wasn't. I just felt.
Do you do you regret that now? Do you look back and think, oh, I wish that at 13 I'd started?
Well, I think because of, you know, things like certain things that happened when I was younger, maybe not dealing with that. And I went down an odd path and got into things I shouldn't have. But I think it's all, like, I probably wouldn't do comedy if it wasn't for that. And I'm happy with how things are now, I guess. So I wouldn't want to, what's that for, like, the butterfly effect? If you changed one thing, then it would all Yeah.
So your latest stand-up show is called We'd Prefer Somebody a Bit More Mainstream. Tell us about it.
So it's basically sort of a follow-on from my show when I sort of discovered that I had mental health problems, and then this is a follow-up, and it bothers me because I'm just myself, but often, like, bookers of gigs will say, like, I got a lot of gigs pulled at Christmas time, and they said we'd prefer someone a bit more mainstream.
So are you seen as a variety act?
Well, yeah, and I'm literally, like, it's like my first ever gig in London. I was waiting to go on stage, and the compere goes, "Oh, the next act is a character act," and I'm thinking, "Brilliant, who's this? It was me."
so they think this is a persona you're putting on.
Yeah, yeah.
So the classic question, and perhaps to stop you from seeing a bright yet, is there, and this applies to you, Lawrence, as well, being a comedian with a disability and doing disability-related material, is there a kind of plan at one point, I've got to not do that? Are you conscious of it? Are you happy to mix the two?
I just now, because I spent so long trying to do what I thought would fit. If I talk about something, I do get lured into a false sense of security, because at my mental health gig that I do, when I try out material for that and it's really, like, about, like, I'll make a joke out of, like, failing to kill myself and stuff, and they'll love it. So then I'm like, oh, brilliant, that is ready for the big weekend club. And then I'll go do it and everyone's just like, oh, my goodness. So.
And that's, when you say the mental health gig, this is a gig for people who have also got mental health, or just all the comedians?
Well, it sort of happened, like, it's accidentally happened like that. So it was initially for just the comedians to come on and talk about anything that relates to mental health. So it's quite loose, but then it just naturally drew a mental health audience. So a lot of the people that come, and now I think about it, it probably makes sense because, like, if you find, like, a bit, like, because sometimes weekend comedy is like, it's like being in Magaluf. It's horrible. People flashing you and all sorts.
So this is your monthly club, Barking Tales.
In Manchester.
So you're taking that up to
Edinburgh,
but it's going from monthly to nightly.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. You're doing two shows.
Yeah. I know.
How, I mean, are there enough comedians to get people on every night?
Yeah, do you know what? There's never been.
With mental health problems, not just comedians, but comedians with mental health problems.
That's what I mean.
Because everyone, I think I'm right in saying it's one in four people who are affected at some point in their lives, is it? And so chances are, if the comedian, and the comedians are in it for, like, the reason they got into comedy is usually because they've got issues.
Ever since that whole asking your teacher on a date.
But how do you know, Harriet, like, whether, like, if you're approaching somebody to say, will you come to my night comedians with mental health problems, how do you know that they're not going to say, well, excuse me, I don't have any mental health problems?
Yeah, so that's happened once where I was like, oh, Phil, you'll have to come on. And it's like, how do you know? And I was like, oh, I thought everyone knew.
But is it about their material? It's not that they've all got crazy stories.
Well, yeah, and then a lot of people that do comedy have at some point struggled with, like, drink and drugs or whatever. So they're like, instantly. And you know what? I get I chat to a lot of the acts, like in the green room and that. So, and then after I did my solo show about mental health, people started opening up to me about it. So then it was like, so a new comedians from that. And also, it's really weird, but I have a spidey sense for it now as well. I'll just be like
a gaydar, the mental health.
But
version.
Yeah, like a mentor.
And what is it? What are the little clues? What are the things that you go, oh, yeah?
Well, turning up for gigs last minute, so they have to do, so they do all waiting in the car until they're on stage because it's like, because the social anxiety of it all. But then that's usually me, so then I don't really get to see who else, because I'm the last
one. If anyone arrives after you, they're in really serious trouble.
Exactly. And just anyone that's, I just thought you could just tell when someone's having a tough time, couldn't you, really?
You can. I don't know. I don't know whether I'd be that astute. But
I don't know either.
You've got a podcast as well, Harriet.
Blimey, as if you're not busy enough.
I know, but I don't do it very often. What it was...
What's it called?
The Comic Stopover.
Okay.
Because I'd given up drinking, and after gigs, it's so sociable, like, it's so tempting to want to go out and get drunk. Yep. So I started doing it so that when I was staying over somewhere, I would go back and do a podcast instead of going out drinking. So it's really more for my benefit than anyone else's. just to cope with life.
Jack, where are you at on disability, comedy, all that sort of stuff?
Well, I love it. I love watching it. And I do want to actually get into it.
Hello.
Hello, I know. I have material. I just never have gone for a gig. And so it's something that I will be trying this over the summer, talking about having brittle bones. What that's like growing up with someone with brittle bones, my family life, being short, being engaged.
Do you not feel like doing comedy but without the disability part of it? Does that not appeal?
Yeah, no, I do have a lot of jokes that are not based around my disability, but I just find, as somebody completely new to stand-up comedy, and exactly, someone who's not been doing comedy, not been writing for long, it is so much easier and so much more comforting just to write about yourself. And I have a disability, so
I'm debating whether disability and comedy is now its own genre. I don't know if you think about it, but when, like, Edinburgh last year and this year, there is a whole load of stuff up there.
The not getting booked at Christmas thing that happens to me as well, it kind of dries up. And there is something that, to me, I just do comedy about my experiences. Mm. And because I'm disabled, that always figures in it somewhere along the line. That's all any of the stand-up does. No one says to Graham Norton, don't do the gay stuff. Or, to Joe Brand, don't do stuff about cake. But there's still this perception that disability can't be entertaining.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Bookers take it upon themselves to go, oh, well, I'm thinking of you to you know, take you out. And it's like, well, let me just deal with it myself.
Maybe some impact. I've never had a problem getting work at Christmas. It's not the sort of, not the sort of work I ever want to do. That's the problem. Harriet, where can we see you? How do we find out about you?
So, Barking Tales, the mental health showcase, is at 2:15 every day at T-Bar, the Tank Room on Cowgate. Both shows are on Cowgate, so it's easy to find. Nice. And the second one, my solo show, is at 5:30 at Cowgate Head.
And that's all the way through August?
Yeah, I didn't give myself a day off.
Good luck. Good luck to you both.
Yeah, good luck, everyone.
Have a brilliant time.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for coming along. That's Harriet Dyer, Jack Binstead and Lawrence Clark. More details about them and what they're up to on our podcast pages at bbc.co.uk/ouch. And once again, remember to review us on iTunes and other podcast services and tell your friends about us by sharing our Twitter and Facebook posts.
Neither of us are here next month.
Oh, we're not.
The audience cheers.
New baby, new hip. It's a big time.
But we will be putting out an hour special. Can you believe this, Kate? The first time they go out on the road.
Sour.
And guess where they're going? The world famous Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Maybe we'll be hearing from some of you.
Yeah.
So, okay, everyone just nodded. Featuring in-depth interviews with some of the disabled talent performing there this year. That's going to be with our own Emma Tracy. And, of course, if you listen to us via the BBC Ouch podcast feed, you can hear our sister programme, Inside Ouch, every Friday.
So, to play us out this month is US reggae band The Merry Rockers. Marissa is the lead singer and songwriter and was born with cerebral palsy and low vision. She says their new album, Embrace It, tells a story of how she began to accept who she was.
Marissa says the album speaks to anyone who may be struggling in life, but in particular, people with disabilities.
This track, track number one, is called The Merry Rockers Theme, and here it is. We'll be back soon. Goodbye.
We're the Merry Rockers and we're here to stay. Spread magical and powerful. So how many eyes does it take to get to the center of a third, to get to the answer in a word? One conclusion is absurd. I'm a channel for positivity and good music. Teach the children to use it. Creation limitless. We lead them to be a good example.